You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 313. This week, we talk about Doom Patrol, brick by brick. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now,
the cast begins.
Star Trek Discovery?
Not since it's come back.
Okay, I'm caught up, so I think like it's been 3 or 4 episodes since it's come back. It did some really, really unexpected stuff that I really enjoyed, but I can't say anything more because that's spoilers.
Yeah, I haven't watched it still. I'm sorry. I'm a terrible person.
You are.
It's on my
Shame.
List. Well, I've been very distracted by something else.
What have you been distracted with?
So have you guys heard of this game, Subnautica?
Yeah, I heard about it from your Facebook.
Like millions of hours into it.
I know, I've played like, I got it about a week ago and I've played like 24 hours in the game. God, it's so cool. And it's terrifying and fun. Like, there's parts where the ocean is just murky and you can't see anything except the murk. And then you hear an animal and all of a sudden this giant creature is eating your submarine. And then it swims away and you think, oh, I'm safe now. And then it comes back and finishes the job.
So I haven't played it myself, but like, so Grant and I have this setup where our desks are facing away from each other, so he's behind me. I'll play it, and every so often, like, I'll just hear, like, and then, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And yeah, this happens, like, fairly regularly when he's playing.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, and he's not someone who, like, scares easy, either. It, like, super creeps him out, I think.
Well, so it's not really, like, a horror game in, like, the way that, like Resident Evil or Silent Hill is. What scares me the most about this game is the unknown in the game. Like, you can only see so far, because it's the ocean, or sometimes it's dark and you can only see like the beam of where your flashlight's pointing, and something will just come out of nowhere. And a lot of times it's not something that can like eat you or, but it won't kill you. But it's still scary because it like pops up out of nowhere. Or sometimes you see the creature and you're like, I need to go where that thing is. And I'm too scared to try to swim past it. Because it's fucking scary. Because you know it's going to try to eat you. And you can, and then you know, you only have so much air. And so you have to try to swim back to your submarine or the surface if you're close enough. And you can, and like when your little counter of air gets to zero, you start to black out. it's all kinds of crazy things happen in the game. Like yesterday I wanted to move my sea base deeper, so I had to disassemble the old one. And I wasn't paying attention when I was rebuilding it in the new one, and my hull integrity failed in the sea base, and so it started to flood. And so I had to run. I had to first reinforce the hull so it wouldn't break again. Then I'd swim around and find all the, you know, all the breaches and fix them. And then I had to wait for it to drain of water, and that was pretty exciting, and kind of scary, but it was awesome. The game's just really cool, like. It's awesome. I love it. Like, there hasn't been a game for a while for me where I like think about the game when I'm at work and like I look forward to going home and playing the game some more. And that is definitely my experience with this game. It's got a little bit of like Minecraft because you have to collect resources and build equipment. But it's also got a huge exploration aspect where part of the way to get resources is you have to explore. But then there's the game also has a story. Like there's a goal to the game. You're trying to escape. You're trying to get off the planet because you're stranded. But there's all these tasks you have to complete to eventually escape. And the game doesn't really like hold your hand through it. You know how like in a lot of games you go to like a person and they give you your quest.
Yeah.
In this, you as you're swimming around, you collect PDAs that people have dropped, and they give you information about where you are, or like give you hints. Or sometimes you'll get a distress call on your radio from one of the other life pods that's crashed, and you go to check it out, and then it gives you some piece of equipment that you need. But as you have to keep going deeper into the ocean. To do that, you have to find equipment that can handle the depths. Like the first submarine you get can only go to 200 meters, and if it goes below 200 meters, the pressure starts to crush it. So you have to find upgrades. You have to figure out how to upgrade the submarine, and then there's three vehicles you can build. There's a small submarine, a huge submarine, and then this thing called a prawn suit, which is like a mech suit that you could wear. That thing can go really far down, but it has disadvantages. Like it basically just walks on the seafloor. And it can jump, like it has these jets, but the jets have a limited amount of time. So if you go too far and you can't jump out of that chasm you decided to explore, you basically have to leave your prawn suit there and swim away.
Hey, it's only $25.
Yeah. It had been in early access for like a year or two, and they released the full version last week.
Ooh, it's VR cool. enabled too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Part of me is like scared to is kind of terrified to try that. But the game is, I mean, I don't know if everybody's going to like it. Like I posted about it on Facebook and Brian was like, "Oh, you have to build things." So he didn't want to play it, but you know, not everybody is into every game.
That's Brian though.
But I really like this game a lot.
Brian reels on games like Minecraft where you have to buy things or like build things in order to have fun or like build things before you can do other things. But then he's an achievement hoarder in Warcraft. And I'm like, all you do all day is grind reps. Like what? And you're saying like Minecraft is tedious. What the fuck are you doing? How many times have you killed that one pirate over there today?
This game's not that tedious. Like the basic materials you need to build stuff are pretty plentiful. And it's not just building things for building's sake, like I guess Minecraft could be. Like you're trying to achieve something. You're trying to escape the planet. And trying not to get eaten by Reaper Leviathans.
I'm gonna add this game to my cart right now, because I have like just not been so you know, like you have your time that you work, your time that you're doing things you need to do that isn't work, like chores and whatever, and then you have your like little bit of free time, and it's like your free time, right? So you shouldn't feel, you know, you should use it however you like, you should use it. Except I feel like lately I've just been wasting my free time because I've been watching Dragon Ball Super.
Is that really a waste?
I mean, it's not as much of a waste as watching Dragon Ball Z, but it's still a waste because it's like, it's a continuation of the story, but it is still the exact same thing, but with less in it. And like, but so like the big selling point of this one is supposed to be that there's not as much filler in the fight. There's not like a, you know, a 5-episode spirit bomb, right? But
oh my God. Yeah.
But the construct of the show is literally the exact same. Oh, well, we defeated the supervillain, and now we have a happy life just doing what we were going to do. And Well, it's great. And, you know, we'll train in the background just in case. So, you know, just stay in shape. And then, oh my god, some crazy villain showed up. I don't know how we're possibly going to beat them. Oh, dig deep. Beat them. All right, good. Time to train harder. Oh god, another impossible. It's just like the same fucking thing over and over. It's the same thing cycling over and over and over. And I was like, well, you know, everybody says good things about this one. And Vegeta has blue hair now, so now let's see what that is. But it's still just the same thing. So I don't think we're going to. I say like I don't think we're going to keep watching it as if I didn't just watch like 60 episodes.
Yeah, this Subnautica has been what I've been filling my time with, my free time, and like nobody else I know is playing it, so I can't really talk. I don't have anybody to talk to about it. So what I've been doing is when I get to work, I message Brandon, my cousin Brandon, on Facebook, and give him what I call my undersea update, and I just tell him what I did the night before.
I'm sure that's his favorite part of the day.
I'm sure it is. You get to name your different like equipment, like your ships and stuff. So my big submarine is called Arthur Curry, and my small submarine is called Mira. And the like prawn that. Suit is not on theme. The prawn suit is just called Scuba Steve.
What the hell is Aqualad's name?
Dude, okay, so there's Garth, other funny Garth, thing that happened. Right. There's these creatures called, and they're kind of annoying. They don't really hurt you, but they're attracted to titanium, which is one of the main materials you need. So they like to steal titanium stuff. So when I rebuilt my sea base, I created this room called a scanner room, which like is a sonar, and it like can help you find things in the vicinity nearby. And what the scanner room also has is it has these camera drones that you can pilot nearby and like check stuff out. Well, as soon as I built the scanner room, the stalkers just came up and stole the cameras. So if I change my point of view to the camera's like swimming around by itself. And if I turn it a certain way, I'm like looking down the throat of this sea creature. And I just...
I feel like I should just cave and buy this game.
It's... So... From my perspective, I mean, this is my opinion, but this is really one of the best video games I've played in a really long time. Like, there's so much to it. And there's not really, like, fighting or... There's no combat in it, really. I mean, you have a knife, and sometimes a little fish will try to bite you, and you basically just have to stab them to make them go away. But, like, you can equip your ships with torpedoes eventually, but from what I've been reading online, the torpedoes kind of suck. Like, they're not all that useful, and the thing, too, is you have to make them. So you need to go... So as soon as you run out of torpedoes, you got to go build more. So a lot of it is running away from things that are trying to eat you.
Hold on, I'll be right back.
Okay. But yeah, I love this game.
Yeah, Grant was obsessed for a while, and I know that... I think he played it more when it was in early access. But he did mention, like, it did, you know, have its official launch, so... He'll probably go back to it.
Yeah, I had it on my wish list for a long time, and I'd watched some streamers who played it, and I just not gotten around to buying it. And then when it launched, I was like, all right, I'm ready to buy it. Because truthfully, I'm a little bit scared of the ocean. Oh. And so this game... like, this game... is kind of terrifying for me sometimes.
Yeah, I could see why that would be.
It's so funny because I really, like, when I was a kid, I went deep sea fishing a lot, and I love it. And I'm not scared of, like, going on boats and things like that, but I'm terrified of what might be in the water that I can't see. And this game really plays that up. So sometimes if you're cruising along in your submarine, like, you'll bump into a fish, and it makes this huge thud sound. And you think, oh my god, something's attacking me. But truth is, you just ran over a fish.
Okay. I went and got my wallet when I was BRB, and I just bought the game.
Cool.
Nice. I don't think you'll regret it. So enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
All right. I would not recommend that you watch Dragon Ball Super.
I'll probably
we're doing recommendations between each other. I'm going to buy your game, but don't watch my thing on Crunchyroll. It's not worth your time.
Yeah, I was going to watch it. I mentioned it to my cousin the other day, or like a month ago. I was like, oh, should I check this out? And he's like, nah, don't bother.
Harsh. It's true.
I mean, like, as Dragon Ball goes, this is probably the best Dragon Ball they've made. But if you've watched Dragon Ball, you know what this is. So, like, if you've never watched Dragon Ball before and you want to see two dudes fight a bunch, this is really, really good fight animation. It's kind of fun to watch, but there's no such thing as character. There's, you know, the plot's repetitive. It's the same thing. It's, like, the best that this thing has ever been, but it's still the same thing.
Dragon Ball delivers what it does, and it doesn't do much else, but it's good at what it does if you want like a very singularly focused thing.
I mean, and
this is true.
What I will say in its favor is like I think everybody else who ever watches Dragon Ball, I'm a Vegeta fan, and it's finally at the point where Vegeta is stronger than Goku, so that's like satisfying fan service.
Nice.
But you know, like I can tell it's not gonna last. It's like just this arc. Probably not even before the boss fight is over, Goku will be the stronger one again. You know how it goes. Because it's still Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
It's still the exact same fucking thing.
Oh, I have one more thing before we talk about about the comic. So, Andy, your recommendation of getting the Will Wheaton narrated version of
Ready Player One
was amazing. Dude, I love it.
It's so good.
I'm almost done. There's like an hour left of the audiobook.
Haven't you read that one already? Or did you not read it yet?
I have a copy of the book and I started reading it. I just haven't finished it. And now I've been listening to Will Wheaton read it and it's amazing. I love it. I want to tell Will Wheaton how much I love it.
I'm not that far in because I really only listen to the audiobook when I'm like out of podcasts to listen to. So it's like Thursday and Friday out of the week that I listen to the audiobooks while I'm like walking around work. But what I love is hearing Will Wheaton make the Star Trek references.
I don't know. There's a part where he talks about Will Wheaton.
Oh, I haven't gotten there yet.
Like not a lot. It's like a name drop, but that really like made me giggle. I was like, he's talking about himself.
That's meta.
It's really satisfying because he knows the correct pronunciations, he knows the correct inflections for everything, like, because you know he's the same uber nerd that the book is about. That he's not that far off from the protagonist.
Yeah. So it's really good. Like, I'm the opposite. What I tend to do is listen to audiobooks while I'm driving, and podcasts while I'm at work, like sitting at my desk. So, I've gotten pretty far into the thing, and it's been really good. So, like, I've been listening to it while I wash the dishes and stuff too. So,
yeah, you know. I listen to Wheels on the Bus on the way to work. Wheels on the Bus, Frere Jacques.
Oh, well, see,
Rainbow.
We don't listen to it. I don't listen to it with the kids are in the car. We listen to other stuff. Anyways,
this week's comic.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
All right. This week we read Doom Patrol, Brick by Brick by Gerard Way. This is another, I've already lost count, of our installments of our Best of 2017 series. We used to have a structure, rhyme, reason for doing things. This time we just picked like 9 things from last year, and this made the list. This is a quasi-reboot/continuation of the old Doom Patrol, and I think this follows closely from the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol, which is why Flex Mentallo is in there, having been a Grant Morrison creation. I think it was Grant Morrison, or was it Alan Moore? I don't know.
He is a Grant Morrison. You're correct.
Okay, one of the weirdos. I say that lovingly, one of the weirdos.
Yeah, man, I love some weird comics sometimes.
This thing, I like Doom Patrol. I like
Like, I like the weirdos. I like the offbeat C-list heroes. And I like that this is a team of C-listers who never appear outside of this. It's like the C-list.
Yeah, I really like Negative Man, like, as a character.
Yeah, and I love...
He was really cool.
I love Robot Man. So it's like, take Thing, but make him a robot. these characters are likable. So I bought the first issue of this when it came out in the stands, and it was just too weird for me. I couldn't handle. So I didn't keep going. But now we've read it for the show. I'm happy that I did.
Point of clarification, I am like blanking. We read Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol for this podcast, yes?
Yes.
Was it Grant Morrison? I don't remember. I know we read Doom Patrol once.
Well, let me look it up. I remember if it was volume one, though, and I don't remember what we read it for, because the archive's not quite working right now.
I can't remember it all, and I can't remember what happened or who the characters were.
I think the only, the one we read, I remember, had, it definitely had Robot Man and Negative Man, well, and the Chief also, but I think it, the other characters it had was, like, Rita Farr, and somebody else. I don't think it was necessarily the same complete lineup of characters. And Doom Patrol's been around since like the 70s. So yeah.
We read Doom Patrol Crawling from the Wreckage, which was volume one of Grant Morrison's run.
Okay.
So that was like him taking over the book. So I don't think that's why we didn't read Flex Mentallo in there, because he wasn't in the story yet.
Correct. And Flex Mentallo was created as a separate thing by Grant Morrison, so he gets folded in just Morrison gets to be Grant Morrison.
I was looking up some information about the characters on Wikipedia, and Grant Morrison, he considers his Flex Mentallo miniseries as part of, let me see if I can find the, okay. So, this is a line from Wikipedia talking about the 1996 Flex Mentallo miniseries that was created by Morrison and Frank Quietly. So apparently Grant Morrison says the miniseries forms part of what he calls a thematic hyper-sigil trilogy with the Invisibles and the Filth. So if it's anything like the Filth, I don't know if I want to read it.
I'm not going to. I've heard great things. I know where I am with Grant Morrison. But I will say I appreciate the way that... saying that, though, that I'm not a fan of Grant Morrison, I appreciate the way in which Gerard Way, who wrote this, I can tell is a Morrison fan, and pulls a lot of Morrison references from a lot of different places and evolves them and changes them in a way that feels natural. Like, we've read Danny the Street before, because Danny the Street was in Teen Titans, right? Was in the New 52 Teen Titans. And this feels like a really nice evolution of that character. Like, if you take this person or take this being and stretch its powers, like, just imagine in 10 years it was practicing what it could do as a street, as a sentient place. Like, how can it expand? Like, what does that mean when that entity expands its powers and abilities? What's the evolution of that look like? And this is a really cool interpretation, like Dannyland. I appreciate the way in which the character is even like maintains its childishness and innocence because it's Dannyland, but obviously from the narration is more adult and more grown up and has bigger awareness of the people inside him that he's created. Like, it's a really good evolution of the character. I really did like Danny in this, because when I first read it in Teen Titans, I rolled my eyes, and when I heard it was Grant Morrison, I rolled my eyes even harder, but I actually like Danny in this.
Well, I mean, you're right. The whole concept of a sentient place is very interesting, but I think it's probably not easy to make the character interesting. But I think Gerard Way did a good job. Like, this comic was obviously pretty weird, and there were some places where it was not that easy to follow what was going on.
Yeah,
but I think as an overall package, it was well done overall.
Yeah,
I think it all works together well. There's a lot of things that I still don't understand, like who is Ricardo? Like, like, what's his deal? Is he like a new character?
He has magic fingers.
I went back and I looked at every lineup of Doom Patrol teams, like, and I couldn't find any reference to Ricardo. Maybe I missed it because there's like, this is like the seventh incarnation of the Doom Patrol.
Yep.
But I don't know who he is. So if you know, I would love to be filled in.
I think he's just a rando who used to work at Danny the Cabana.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's it.
Maybe he is just a rando.
I think he's just from Danny the same way that Casey is from Danny.
Okay.
That'd be my interpretation.
Maybe he was like a side character. And like people who had read previous volumes would recognize him. And that's fine. I mean, that's doesn't bother me. It just like I was just really curious about who he was. Because I feel like every character in this has real significance, and it's not obvious. It's not always obvious. Like the little alien Teddy Ruxpin. I didn't know what he was until they pulled a cassette tape out of his stomach.
Oh, so, yeah. See, and I want to have a discussion here about this too, because that was one of the things I went back and forth with when I was reading this, and I feel like with the two of you, I have two different viewpoints here. So I do want to actually talk this out because I don't know where I am. I like the way that this book makes a lot of clear references to the older Doom Patrol. Now I like Doom Patrol. I've read Doom Patrol. Kevin McGuire did Doom Patrol for a while, so I read that.
Keith Giffen did Doom Patrol.
Keith Giffen. That's right. And like. But at the same time, I don't memorize those stories, you know? And I don't remember a ton of details from those. I read them. I remember character names. I knew who Larry was going to be before he remembered that he was Negative Man. So, like, that's fine. But I also feel like when I'm reading this, there's a lot of stuff that comes back that I don't remember everything about. Like, I remember Crazy Jane being a person, but I don't necessarily remember a ton of details about Crazy Jane. And the entire sixth issue is about Crazy Jane. And, like, the some drama that she had with Cliff and stuff, and I don't know, and, like, it's, I go back and forth because if you are a fan of Doom Patrol, if you are a fan of the C-list team that doesn't get respect, then those references are awesome for you. But at the same time, like, that, the number of people who are those fans, that's dwindling and dwindling and dwindling, I think, as time goes on, especially if you create a book like this that is so many inside references, that does have so many barriers to entry. I mean, this was a fun book to read, but there's a lot of stuff in here that I'm like, I don't really know if I read that fourth volume of, you know, from the 1983 run of Doom. Like, I don't know, man. And I don't know what, you know, like, I'm going back and forth in my head. It's nice to have fleshed out characters who have a history, but I feel like I need to know that history a bit more than what I did for this.
So I actually have a couple things to say on that point. I want to start off by just like noting that in his afterword to the comic, in the trade, Jared Way talks about like a review that he read where the guy was like, I can't really review this because, or here, I'll just quote it. I can't review this book in a meaningful way because it's not something to be reviewed. It's really a comic to be experienced. And then Way goes on to say, and that is exactly the kind of book we were trying to make without fully knowing it at the time. It's supposed to be something you go through. We want to conjure feelings and questions, moods and moments. We want you to feel like it's 3 a.m. and you have no idea what's going on, but somehow you do. So,
okay, I mean, they did that, I'd say.
I feel more sympathetic, but I really did not enjoy reading this. I put every day on my to-do list to read one issue, and it took me 6 days, and I didn't want to read the next issue. And so part of the issue here is, I think, like, we've read the one Grant Morrison thing so long ago that I don't remember anything from it. I don't remember a lot of the references. I mean, we talk about, like, you know, Danny the Street appearing in other runs of things. I'm like, I don't remember that.
That's literally the only thing I remember about New 52 Teen Titans was that Danny the Street was in it.
There was the guy that made the purple stuff. I remember that guy too.
I don't.
And then, like, even David was like, he pointed out that, like, the weird thing that, like, went fug inside Danny was, like, a weird alien Teddy Ruxpin. And, like, that cultural reference went over my head, too.
I don't know if he was intentionally a Teddy
but Ruxpin. But, I mean, like, after you said it, I was like, oh, hey. This is, I think, the most inaccessible comic I've ever read. And I say that with the fact that we did read stuff like The Filth. And I feel like this is a love letter to previous Doom Patrol comics. And there was, for me, as someone with no background, who was just trying to go through and put it together. It was like, by issue 2 or 3, I wasn't even trying to string together plot. I was just like, I'm going to try to get the feeling out of this because that's all I can do. It was just a lot of words. Like, I feel like the amount of writing was not congruent with the amount of art. Reading this whole block of thing, then I'd have to like look at what was going on, and they didn't necessarily explain each other any better as I went through it. So I spent the whole time like, yeah, I was like, what's happening? But no, I didn't feel like somehow I do know what's happening. I felt really lost, like I was reading something completely incoherent to me that I couldn't put together because I was missing necessary parts of information that I should have had. And I don't mean like as a reader, I think the author should have given that to me. I think that there was an expectation that I was coming to the table with something I simply did not possess. So this was like a struggle for me because it was just reading like 175 pages of basically gibberish. And I've never had that happen with a comic before. When we delve into things with like a really deep background where it helps to know, like I can usually kind of turn to Wikipedia and put things together and come out of the other side being like, oh, you know, I learned something. Here, it was just like it felt like a real mental exertion. and I just did not have it in me to try to track what was happening. So like, if you ask me what the hell happened in this comic, I mean, I guess at the end I can describe it, but I think I'm missing so much. Like, I don't know what happened at the very end where what's her face with the black hair, the one who like suddenly became the new roommate, is like feeding some executives.
Yeah, I don't know what that one is.
Like weird powder or like it took me a while to figure out that the lady in the Crazy Jane cult was Sam's wife. And I'm just really, I don't know. It didn't strike a chord with me, but it also made me feel like that was my fault, and that was kind of an unpleasant reading experience to have that happen.
No, I hear you. Now I haven't, like, this is an internal struggle for me that I'm going through after hearing your feedback about how much I hate you. Because the quote about Gerard Ray saying this is what I want the book to be, I feel like he achieved that for a reader like myself or David maybe, but I will agree with you completely that feeling of knowing what's going on without being sure what's going on but somehow being able to make it, like I feel like a lot of the I don't know what's going on is information I should have had if I had read my Doom Patrol before coming into this, you know, like what the fuck was Robert Man doing inside a gyro? A hero. Like, at the beginning. In issue 1, Robot Man is inside a hero.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What? Why? And it's no explanation. And it's just, like, one of his journeys. And then, why are they all scattered to begin with? Like, why? What happened to the Doom Patrol? Like, I feel like if I had just read the end of the previous run, maybe I'd have better context. But I don't know. That's not my fault that I should have read that. Like, I'm picking up volume 1 of a new run. And I want to get into it and think it's neat. And I kind of like Casey Brink because she's quirky and that's cool. I like quirky characters. And after hearing that, I kind of think, oh, well, you did that Gerard way. But the core of me as a literary critic is reader response. And like, it's great that that's what you wanted to put in there. But that's not what I came away with when I finished reading it. I come away with it now because you told me.
But when I read this, I didn't come away with that. I came away with, that was kind of fun, but I don't really know what was happening for half of it. And if that's the feeling he's trying to get across, sure. But that's not the feeling I like when I read a comic. I mean, I don't mind wacky shit and not getting all the references and feeling like I'm too dumb for the comic. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of dumb to read Odyssey. I'm not that much on my feminist movement criticism stuff. Like, I can't do that. I don't know those things. But, I have fun reading it. So I feel like not knowing things isn't a bad, like, it's not something that pushes me away. I just felt like there's so much context that was here and that I feel like the context was intentionally put here. I just don't have any of it. None of it's ever given to me, and none of it's presented in a way that I can figure out. So it's just like context that's then just missing.
I mean, I think that was my struggle too. Like, we've often read things where I think it really helps to know, like, I don't know, just Batman and the fact that he's had like a million Robins at this point, and you kind of got to sort who's who they are. I think if you like came to that like with a totally clean slate, not knowing anything about this, it has the potential to be confusing, but there's resources, like at least online you can figure it out, or like the stories often kind of just give you a little hint, or like it makes it seem like it's not important. Like, if you're reading about Tim Drake, then it's not important to know who Stephanie Brown is, right? Like, this made it seem like I should have known, and it was like important to the story. Like you said, like, why were they separated and why was he in a hero? And side note, I didn't quite catch that. I was like, is this metaphor? And then like I was trying to figure it out, and then like I think at some point my brain just let go of the fact that that was a literal thing that happened, so I forgot about it.
Yeah, he literally was in that hero.
I think that's the thing. Like, there was so much to try to track that I started losing pieces along the way. And that was a little tough.
See, and I think part of it is that the line is gray, too, right? Like, as a comic book writer, there are things I think you can reasonably expect your reader to know in terms of the history of your universe. You know, I mean, there's like the obvious stuff. You probably know that Superman is not Superman all the time. Like, there's the things like the whole construct of an alter ego. You don't have to explain that every time you create a new character. It's understood as being part of the genre. And if you don't understand, there are stories that do address why you have an alter ego. And then there's like another layer of things where it's like the character's history that's such a fundamental part of the character after Origin that it's kind of understood. Like the fact that Joker beat Jason Todd to death. And that was a very traumatic thing for Batman. I feel like that's something DC can expect readers to know. And if you don't, it's a major thing. You can go read it. I don't think you can expect them to know all of the different multiverses, but I think there's an expectation by DC that you understand the concept of a multiverse, and we'll keep explaining it to you, but it's kind of been in and out so much now, and you're probably 30 or 40 as a comic book reader today. I feel like you know what's going on here. And there's those reasonable expectations. I feel like expecting me to know Doom Patrol is a little far off from Jason Todd and Crypto. the line here is a much darker gray than it is with like Jason Todd and all those other things I said previously. So like I don't want to make it sound like every book has to be 100% approachable as if a person reading it had never picked up a comic book in their life. Like, that's not something we can reasonably expect from every story, because then that burdens the writer in a different way. But I feel like here, as a reader, I'm more burdened than I ought to be.
Yeah, and, like, I will say, I don't want to shit all over this comic. That is totally not my intent here. We'll say, like, for instance, Casey's storyline was very coherent to me because it was very clear in its theme. Like, you could see her throughout this comic, like, you see her struggle with things, and the whole time she's very much, like, steadfast to her character. She wants to be a bright light in a dark universe. And she's an optimist, and she's happy and peppy and fast. And it's like, okay, I got that. and that's good. That's a good grounding point. But then everyone else around her, I'm kind of like, who are you and what are you doing and what do you want here? And that, I think, was the main problem. Even if the plot was not like super clear, having strong character themes for more characters would have felt more grounding. But as it was, Casey was the one who like was a really point, but everyone else was just kind of is the word I'm looking for.
Well, and I think that rolls into my other kind of thought about this book, and that's that as much as I like a lot of the characters that make up this Doom Patrol, I feel like the author relies on you having previous knowledge of the characters a little bit, or some context of who they are, because for most of these, there's almost no character development. A lot of them are stock characters and written in a very two-dimensional way, which is fine, I think, because then the end result is the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. This Doom Patrol is more interesting than Robot Man and Negative Man and Crazy Drain. Like, this combination of characters all together and their zaniness when they're with each other is better than they would be alone as characters. And I think it works here also because their primary function is to support Casey Brink as a character. Casey Brink is the only real fleshed out character in this trade. And so if the rest of the team is there to support her, it's kind of like, it's not really a team book. It's more like Casey Brink and the Doom Patrol, but you don't really know who Casey Brink is, so we're not going to put that on the cover.
Yeah. Like, I totally agree with you guys. And I think that this comic, the bar to, like you said, the barrier to entry is pretty high. And I think it could have been, so I feel like definitely this comic is designed to introduce Casey. But I think it's easy to get distracted from that because all the other characters are, the story surrounding the other characters is very mysterious. And I think that can be very distracting to the rest of the story. And even though, like you said, Jen, there is a cohesive story for Casey, the fact that it jumps it has somewhat of a detrimental effect to the overall effectiveness of the story, at least in my opinion. So, you know, I think that overall this was, for me, the reading of it was enjoyable for the most part. But at the same time, like, I get where you guys are coming from, and I don't know if I would recommend this to somebody, especially if they haven't read Doom Patrol before.
Yeah, and I want to be clear too. Like, part of it is just the way in which things are framed for us as the reader, right? Like, we go into Dannyland, and Flex Mentallo is there, which, it's awesome if you know Flex Mentallo or were a fan of Grant Morrison's run of Doom Patrol. Like, there's a lot of places you could know Flex Mentallo from. But if you don't have any exposure to any of those, you come to this and you're like, am I supposed to know who that is? Like, he's talking about his powers and things like I'm supposed to know. Should I supposed to know? But all the information he conveys and the role he plays within the story could have been fuck all make anybody from Dannyland. It didn't have to be Flex Mentallo. So I think making that character Flex Mentallo is a nice nod to people who know him from before, and enables him to be a character in the story later on. That's fine. But for the purpose of the story, he could have been anyone. It could have been big, muscle, burly dude from Dannyland. Dude, you know? But instead it became Flex Mentallo. And I think that choice, while adding depth to somebody who is familiar with it, also is what creates the barrier in a way that doesn't have to be there. Like, we as the reader, when we see a character with a name who acts as if they've been there before, then we feel like we're supposed to as well. When in the point of reality, if we just read it flat, all the information he's giving is information we need that doesn't require the backstory. So it's just, it makes me feel like I have to have that background when in reality I don't. If I just came to this as a blank slate, maybe I would be a better reader as well. So I don't want... It's a decision that has to be made somewhere in the creative process. And I understand wanting to add a character that creates a nod to previous fans because that rewards you as a reader of comics and having that background. And, you know, like, if I see Booster Gold in the Justice League, it makes me kind of happy. I mean, Booster Gold's like B-list now, but he was D. What's another D-lister I like to see?
Like, if I see... Well, I mean, I think...
If I see Uncle Sam in the Freedom Fighters... Sorry.
I think that's part of the problem with comics in general is that maybe there's too much focus on giving nods to past things and winking at like longtime invested readers, and that can maybe that's part of the reason why the comic industry isn't making tons of money. I mean, there's obviously interest in superheroes because the movies do so well, but people don't go into the stores and read them. Or, I mean, I don't know how digital comics are going, but, you know, I just think if they're trying to introduce people to Doom Patrol, this probably wasn't the best way to bring the comic back. That's not to say that this is a bad comic, but maybe the reason I've been reading comics for a long time, and even though I didn't get some of the references here, I think I've read enough really bad stuff that I'm forgiving of this. And you know, like I said, overall, my experience of reading this was positive, but like I said, also I can't recommend this to somebody, and because I don't think this is the best way to drop into Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I don't think this is by any means bad. I just think it's really inaccessible. It is kind of like that other reviewer said. It's hard to review because it's like, what's happening?
Well, yeah. I'll pivot the conversation. I think the undeniable strength of this comic is the art.
The art is great.
Because, I mean, the mood of this is loosey-goosey weird stuff. And this portrays that pretty well. What I appreciate most, though, is that Casey Brink as a character is quirky and charismatic and... I get the feeling like if you ever met her, you couldn't help but have a smile on your face. And I feel like this art has those characteristics too. Like, this art is quirky and charismatic, and when it shines, it puts a smile on my face, and I like reading it. Like, when Danny goes flying and there's a fucking rainbow coming out of him. It's fantastic. It's a flying ambulance with Doom Patrol on the front and a rainbow. Like, that's wonderful. And it's by far, I think, the undeniable strength of this comic is the art.
Yeah, expressive, it's fun, it's bright, it's the action scenes are well done, you can always tell what's happening. And they do a really good job with facial expressions, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That panel where Robot Man gets blown the fuck up by that bus after finally coming back.
Did you read it, Andy? It was a garbage truck.
Garbage truck, that's what it was. Like, hey, there's a lot of great detail there.
So Negative Man, when he's getting all suited up, it has a D on the belt buckle. And it's got a very deep collar. Is that Dead Man's costume that he's wearing?
I don't think so. I think he's had that costume.
I don't know.
I think that's Ben's. Well, it's got the D on it. Ben's setup.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, he has a D on it because he can't put DP on it.
Is that what he's? Is that what he really wanted it to be? DP.
Yeah, Doom Patrol. But you know, you can't, obviously.
Oh, I see. Doom Patrol. Yes.
Yeah. That was the perfect sigh.
for that.
Oh, movie. Yeah. I looked up pictures of Dead Man, and yeah, he doesn't have the D.
No, he doesn't. He's dead. He's fell dead. Off.
No. This is what happens when we record late at night.
Or any time, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not give ourselves too much credit.
So, I want to just say one quick thing about the covers. I promise it's like the last of my complaining. The covers are so good, by the way. I really do think the art's superb in them. And like some of those variants are just like really amazing. But one thing that did cause me some degree of like confusion, and this is maybe just me being like weirdly anally retentive, is that if I'm like kind of looking for a starting place to, you know, pivot my thinking on a comic, and I'm about to read the issue, I'll look at the cover to be like, okay, here is my list of important people that I will seek out in this trade or this issue. And the covers did not provide any context, because so often they included people that were not in that issue at all. Or like, for instance, if we were to look at the cover of the first trade, Sam's son, I think, is on it. The kid with the skateboard.
Sure.
And it's like, he's not in Doom Patrol. He's at home, lighting candles.
Yeah, I don't think he appears to like the fourth issue or something.
Yeah, and he's like, he's in the
basement.
Part of the team. And so it's like, or like, I don't know, you go through and it's like, they have a lot of these really awesome covers that have the full team, but then you go through the issue and you're like, shouldn't I be looking for those people? Shouldn't I know like who they are? And it's just like, no, they're not there. And I don't know, like, that was just like a weird thing for me, because and maybe I'm spoiled, because I think very commonly now in comics we get these really awesome covers that give you a hint of something that is about to happen. They act as like a little summary of the issue you're about to read, and these did not do that.
Yeah. They're cool though.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just being a butt. I will say,
you're allowed to have your opinion, Jen.
Yeah.
Just not that one. There's a variant cover for issue one that's like this weird pastel-y paint, like collage. And it has like Robot Man in it, and it's variant for number one by Brian Chippendale. I don't know if it's in your guys' issues or edition or whatever. It is so cool. I ended up staring at the thing for like 5 minutes straight.
Oh, I found it. That is really cool.
I've not seen a comics cover like that, and it is just so awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like if I look at it more, I'll find more hidden.
Yeah.
Because Robot Man is clear. You can see him, but I feel like there's got to be more stuff hidden in there. Other characters in particular.
Yeah, I still can't find anything else, but like I want to just like look at it. Right, it's very mesmerizing. So huge props for that cover. It's my favorite.
And in case you didn't get it from the trade or the digital, whatever you picked up, issue one that has the hero on the cover, you peel, like, it's like it folds off. So you peel off the hero and it shows the universe underneath. That wasn't two separate covers. Like, if you go through the digital, it looks like two separate, but you, like, you could fold open the front page and the hero reveals the universe. It was neat. Yeah. That's why I picked it up.
I actually really liked the part where Sam is talking about like what's on his Euro, and it shows the like Euro world and the people crossing the desert. I thought that was just a really cool panel.
Yeah. It's they also changed like the art style too in a really neat way. Oh, the train! I understand the train now.
Yeah, that like just... I because, you know, at the beginning of the issue, I mean, maybe you have to be somebody who's familiar with Doom Patrol to get the significance of the train in the first issue. But now that we're looking back at it, I think, oh, yeah, the train connects with Jane. And yeah.
Well, that sounds like we're ready to rate it.
Sure.
All right. But before we do that, though, and regardless of everything we've said before, I want to take a minute to thank the author, Gerard Way, Nick Darrington, who did pencils, Tom Fowler, who did inks, Tamara Bonvillain, who did colors, Todd Klein, who did letters, Shelley Bond, Jamie Rich, and Molly Mahan, who were the editors. Because regardless of what we said, regardless of what we're going to rate it, this comic was made by these people. They put in the creative effort, they did the thing, and they did the work to get it into our hands. And whatever we thought of it, it wouldn't even be here for us to look at and talk about if they hadn't done that work. And so we can sit around and talk about comics and things we liked and things we didn't like, but they're creating it, they're doing the thing, and they deserve some props for that, if nothing else. So let's get down and rate this. 2.5 is average. You can go up or down based on whatever the fuck reason you want it to, right? Yeah, okay. Jen, how about you go first?
Okay, I'm gonna give this a 2. Just based on the fact that I couldn't recommend this to someone without knowing that they, like, had a good background in Doom Patrol. I really don't think it's a bad comic, though. I think that it's a really nice love letter to a team that Gerard Way obviously really likes and cares about, and I think that this comic had some really nice, like, bright spot messages. Casey was, like, just a really great character. Like, the little asides were funny. It's just, I felt so lost, and it felt uninviting, and that was not a good reading experience for me personally. I really did like the art. I think the alternate covers were cool. I think the main covers were really cool. Like you can't say anything bad about the art for this comic. It's really well done. It's beautiful. The faces are great. Like, even Robot Man has, like, this wonderful gamut of expression, and his face is metal. It looks like a robot the whole time. It's just, yeah, like, I wouldn't... This is such a weird comic, because usually I can say, like, oh, this is good, I recommend it, or this was not good, and I don't. But this was good, but I don't recommend it. Say two.
All right. David?
I'm actually going to go with a 3. I'm like I said before, I think I tend to be a little more forgiving, maybe, is entertainment, so agree with Jen. Like, I had some of the same experiences, like getting lost in the comic and stuff, or wondering what the significance of somebody was, like Ricardo. I personally enjoyed the experience and overall thought it was pretty good, but I also do agree that this is not something that I would recommend to somebody who's first getting interested in comics. And I think that the way that the existing Doom Patrol members interacted with Casey in the story and what they did kind of was distracting from the story of Casey. But but like I said, overall, I think it was pretty good. And the art was beautiful. I love the art. I'll tell somebody to flip through and look at the pictures. No, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, so I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 3 as well. I feel like there's some things that are here that are barriers to entry artificially, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff here that's good, and it's fun to read. And, like, there's not a whole lot of deep stuff happening here, which sounds like an insult, but it's not. It's fine. Sometimes it's good to just go along for the ride. And I think it's fun to go along for the ride with Casey and Danny, the ambulance world cabaret thing, cabana. Like, I don't get what's going on there, but fine, sure, let's just move on through. Let's just keep going. And you know, like, sure, maybe I feel kind of like
Robot Man being in a universe inside a hero is just some random thing that's there to be quirky for the sake of being quirky, which is something I hate in comics. But I also like Robot Man, and I don't mind that he's, you know, a stock character in here, that he's like, he's the burly grumpy guy in a robot suit. That's okay. Because that's not why this comic exists. I feel like this is Casey Brink and the Doom Patrol, and Casey Brink is a new character, and it's fun to read her, and I like it. And the Doom Patrol's just kind of here as a supporting cast, probably to bring people in, but might be actually pushing people away. I don't know. Plus, I was going to go 2.5, but then at the end of every single issue, I don't know if you guys got these in the trade, there's like connect the dots and coloring pages for Bane. Did you guys get those?
No, the
no. Comicsology.
You didn't get those? Oh my god.
That's so sad.
Like at the end of the single issue, there's like a page or two of like coloring with Bane, and it's like Bane giving a kid like an ice cream cone, and it's like pencil art, and you get to color it in. And there's that's one hilarious. Of like Bane flying on a hang glider, and it's like connect the dots hang glider.
That's really funny.
So yeah, they're you know, I'm gonna give a half a star just for those, because that's hilarious.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
So yeah, 3. That's it for this week then. Next week we're going to read Everyone's a Eleven One or a Eleven Two, a book by Jomny Sun. I have no idea what this is, but it's on every single list, and I hope it's not depressing as shit like some other stuff we've read. Because the last thing I had no idea what it was My Favorite Thing is Monsters, and I did not get what I was hoping to get when I went in. But I think this is supposed to be, I think this is supposed to be a little bit lighter than that, at least. And it is written with the typo on purpose, Alibin, and your is a UR. It's kind of hard to read and type if you don't know. So you can go to welcometocomics.com, and on the left, if you click on the button that says Future Shows, there's a link to Amazon there that shows you exactly what trade we're going to buy and read. So if you're not sure, you can do that. And while you're on the site, you can click on past shows and listen to any one of our 312 previous episodes. Because why the fuck not? Let's just keep making these. And if you like the show, you can go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and throw a couple dollars or pennies at our way. Normally it's rude to like throw pennies at people, but I don't have much dignity left, so go ahead.
I'm totally gonna throw a penny at you next time.
God, I hope you do. I hope you remember this and intentionally carry pennies around in case we run into each other. I'll go have lunch at your office park on Monday.
I'll throw a penny at you from top floors. Oh,
that could hurt though, man. Anyway. That's it for this week then. Yeah, good. Yeah. Okay. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.